Welcome into the expansive world of cis society, a space where taboos dissolve, shadows become allies, and sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality are celebrated as gateways to truth. This is Taboo Talks, a podcast where no topic is off limits, and everything is held with courage, compassion, and curiosity. Together, let's shatter the limits of what we've been taught to fear and transform it into the power to live fully, freely, and authentically. Yay! Welcome back. This month, we are exploring the embodied, often misunderstood, and wildly liberating worlds of both squirting and prostate orgasms. Through both a sacred, a spiritual, and a scientific lens. And these aren't just physical phenomena, they're gateways into deeper intimacy, emotional release, nervous system recalibration, and profound self-connection. So we're really peeling back the layers of shame, of myth, and performance to reveal the truth of what's possible when we bring reverence and curiosity into the most tender and electric parts of our erotic selves. To guide us through this expansive terrain is someone whose work has changed the game in both personal and professional realms. Charlie Glickman, PhD, is a sex and relationship coach, a somatic sexuality educator, a sexological body worker, that's a mouthful, I love that, and an internationally acclaimed speaker. He's been working in this field for over 35 years, and some of his areas of focus include sex and shame, feels relevant to our taboo conversations, sex positivity, queer issues, masculinity and gender, communities of erotic affiliation, and many sexual and relationship practices. And Charlie is also the co-author of The Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure, Erotic Exploration for Men and Their Partners. And in February 2023, Charlie completed an accountability process. For more info about that or to learn about his coaching offerings, you can visit makesexeasy.com. Welcome to the show, Charlie Glickman. We're so happy to have you.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Oh, it's such an honor. Like, we decided to do this topic of squirting, and like about, I don't know, maybe a week or two in, Alfina's like, wait, what about the prostate? Like, it's not getting any shout out. Like, we need to represent the prostate too. And so I was so grateful and excited when she connected with you. And this is really an area of expertise for you. So we're excited to really zoom in to the prostate and to like this, the world of butts, honestly. And my first question for you, that I'm curious about is really what inspired you to explore prostate pleasure as a central part of your work? And why do you think it's such a powerful and overlooked part of male sexuality?
Ooh, those are some really good questions. So my interest in this on a professional level is actually rooted in my exploration of it on a personal level. I like to say that I discovered anal masturbation when I was 14. I say that I discovered it because at the time, and this is, you know, my 14-year-old brain was thinking, well, this feels amazing, whatever this is, and obviously nobody else knows about this, or someone would have told me that this was here.
Why would they keep this from me?
I know, right? I felt a little betrayed. Like, why didn't anyone tell me about this? But, you know, I very quickly discovered, well, even at 14, nobody needed to tell me not to talk about it with kids at school or my parents or whatever, because I knew the stigma around it, even if it had never been explicitly sort of transmitted to me. It was still there in the air. But I've been a sex educator since I was 19. And as a queer man doing sex education, the two questions that come up over and over and over again for me are safer sex, especially HIV, and anal and prostate. So it just made sense for me to start looking at these questions and exploring it. And the thing that I discovered is that every time I thought that I had a handle on the big picture of how all of the pieces work and all the sort of topics and the experiences and the emotions and the spirituality that's connected to it. And each time I thought that I was done, something new comes my way. Somebody new shares an experience with me that I had never heard before, or there's a new piece of information that I'm discovering, or all of the work in the last 10 to 15 years around somatic healing, and we're starting to see how that applies to sexuality. So it really has been this ongoing source of wisdom and exploration. There's just, so far, there doesn't seem to be any limit to how much we can learn about this.
Yeah.
And then I guess the other thing I want to say about that is, as a sexuality coach, I want people to be able to explore the full pleasure potential in their bodies, erotic pleasure, as well as other kinds of pleasure. And, you know, whether you decide that anal stimulation is your thing or not, the way that we live in this world disembodies us from that part of the body. So even if it's not an erotic pleasure for you, it can be an embodiment practice for you. And that can be profound. So, yeah, lots of reasons.
Yeah, I hear that. This was literally at the forefront of your sexual exploration. And so, like, this anchor point for you that almost, like, from a soul perspective, it was, like, planted in you, you know? You were, like, guided. Like, you were like, I'm going to explore an unexplored territory.
And then what's going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I, for me, we were talking a bit about this in, like, the pre-show, but so many people, particularly men, associate the prostate or like any sort of like butt play with shame or taboo, which is what we dissect and talk about on the show. So I'm just curious, like, how you address that with clients, how you help clients reframe this part of body as a source of power, of healing, as you put it, and ultimately of like extreme amounts of pleasure from what I've been told.
Fair. Well, I think there's it depends on the person. There's a few different ways that I might approach this with somebody. One of them is I often will talk with folks about the shaming that accompanies toilet training for so many children. Because when you get shamed for, quote unquote, having an accident, which really just means your body isn't yet under your conscious control, but what you learn is to associate that shame with that part of your body. Mm. And because those shaming experiences happen at such a young age, when we're little kids, they tend not to have words connected to it. It more creates a tone in the body. So, you know, what I mean by that is, like, when we're a little older and someone shames us, we can probably remember that experience. I remember being shamed because, I'm trying to think of a good example here, I said I would be home at a certain time, and I came home 2 hours later, and my mother was freaking out at me, and, like, I can remember that shaming experience there. But with these things that happen at such an early age, we don't have clear memories of it. We just have this, like, emotional tone in the body. And so one of the things that I help folks do sometimes is explore that emotional tone. Like, what does that shame want to say? You know, what does the fear that's here want to say? You know, in this emotion that's here, if your heart had a mouth that it could speak, what does it want to say? So that's one piece of it. There's another piece that I often look at, which is the gender dynamics of it. You know, when we wrote the book, The Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure, my book partner and I surveyed a couple of hundred people, men and partners of all genders. And one of the concerns that people shared with us over and over again was, is this going to make me gay? Does this mean that I'm gay? Am I giving up masculine status by taking on the quote-unquote woman's role? And that also goes very deep, because usually we're 3, 4, 5 years old the first time somebody says to us, why are you crying? I thought you were a big boy. Only girls cry. And so boys learn to cut ourselves off from anything associated with the feminine. Which means that for a lot of guys who are curious about exploring prostate play, what comes up for them around that is less around the shame, taboo, hygiene piece, although that's common. But for some men, it's more around, am I giving up my masculinity? And it's not just men. I've heard from plenty of women who have told me that, their boyfriend expressing a desire in pegging, and suddenly she doesn't feel like he's the big, strong, macho protector who she wants. I've heard this from gay men who are primarily tops. I'm using top here in the sense of who's doing the fucking rather than the BDSM sense, because it's used both ways among gay men. But I've talked with men who are primarily tops who are terrified of bottoming because if they take on that role, they give up their top masculine status. So that's another big issue that comes up over and over again. And what I often tell folks about, I tell people two things. One, there's nothing wrong with any sexual orientation, and we can unpack that more if that's helpful. But the other thing that I also tell these guys is that from a sexological perspective, any sexual act that happens between people of different genders is heterosexual. So if a woman is wearing a strap-on and she's pegging her boyfriend, by definition, that is heterosexual sex. Because it's about the genders of the people who do it. And, I know some people out there on the internet are going to say, well, technically it's heterosexual sex if one person is cisgender and one person is transgender. Yeah, that's true. From a sexological perspective, if the two people involved, it could be more, but we're looking at two people here, if their genders are not the same, and there's a whole range of genders out there in the world, then anything they do sexually is heterosexual. And I find that with some men, that really helps them reframe and understand that these stories that we've absorbed and internalized are keeping us from unlocking our full erotic potential. Because there's so much pleasure in that part of the body when we know how to access it, which is not by copying what they do in porn. Just the same.
Yeah, this is a really interesting topic, just this kind of switching roles and how that can be really beneficial for me as, I'm very like feminine in my expression, but whatever feminine and masculine even mean, because I feel like we're kind of entering this new age where we can really make our own definitions around these words, and like feminine can be whatever we want it to be. Feminine can be powerful and embodied and fierce and forward. And so I actually feel like there's so much medicine in kind of switching that polarity
I
and
agree.
allowing both the masculine, the man, I guess, in the situation to feel what it feels like to be penetrated, to receive, to surrender, right? There's such medicine in that men don't usually connect to because they're used to being the penetrator. And then also equally on the flip side, so much medicine in the woman being able to feel like what it feels like to take, to penetrate, to assert oneself. And I think when you switch roles like that, it also gives you so much more compassion and empathy for that other person. Like maybe the man now is going to be a lot more aware of what it feels like to be taken. So they're going to be a lot more slow to enter and more aware of how they enter and delicate with that dance that so many women crave, right? And then also as a woman, now you know what it's like to feel powerful, to assert yourself, to be dominant, which can be super empowering for us as women or whoever that man is who is not usually on top. And so I think that there's so much medicine in switching these poles. And I'm curious to hear what you have to say about that. And then I'm also wanting to go more into what is a prostate orgasm exactly? What's the science? What's the anatomy? What's going on? And how is it different than a regular penis ejaculation orgasm?
You ask such little questions, Alvina. It's wonderful. I could not agree more about the medicine that is available when we try something different. I think that's true for most things, but especially for this. In fact, one of my most popular blog posts, the title is "The World Will Be a Better Place When More Men Take It Up the Ass." and it's true, particularly because, For men who have never been penetrated, sex happens outside your body. And especially when you're younger, you can kind of push through when you've got a little bit of a headache or you had a stressful day at work. You can kind of push through and still enjoy sex. But to receive penetration, you know, one of the things that one of the guys we interviewed for the book said is that for him, to receive anal penetration, his mind, his body, and his heart all needed to be in alignment. In a different way, I mean, I think that's a great thing for living your life, much less any kind of sex. But I think that because this kind of pleasure almost requires that to really deeply enjoy. There is a lot of medicine in that. And, you know, you can also discover what it's like to be really turned on, really attracted to your partner, but you still need warm-up before penetration. So it does help a lot of guys learn to slow down. And your second point about women taking on that role, 100%, it is one of my favorite things when I teach workshops on pegging and I bring in a dozen harnesses and to have like the women in the room just walking around and doing the little helicopter spinny thing that teenage boys do. But there's also something else in there that I want to highlight, which is that I've also heard a lot of women say that like fucking someone's a lot of work. Like it's a Pilates workout. It's a core workout. You're doing plank and this deep core movement for this extended period of time. I've had a lot of women share with me like things like, now I understand why my boyfriend always collapses after sex. It's because this is a cardio workout. So there's both sides to that there. But I'm a big fan of switching things up. You know, I'm a big fan of trying the opposite of whatever you're used to doing, just to see what it's like, you know, when you don't do that thing for a little while.
Yeah, it invites in a lot of compassion and new information. So when you like re-engage from the other side, you just like, there's tenderness that like kind of comes online. Like, I think it was you, Alfina, that was sharing about Layla Martin and on her podcast, how she was like, Layla Martin's this tantric sex therapist. How she thinks every single man needs to be like penetrated once in his life so he can understand what it's like to receive that energy. So then then he can bring that deeper level of responsibility back when he reconnects with who he's penetrating, you know, like, and I think that's so beautiful that like the world would be a better place if every man was fucked, you know, like,
or at least most of us, but yes, probably everybody. Well, and I do think with that, you know, it really just, I think what it does is highlights the fact that a lot of men don't want to take on that responsibility. They just want to get off. And, you know, we can have a conversation about what that means and the implications, but I want to come back to Alfina's other piece, but I want to bring that in because the dudes who just want to get off, in my experience, them exploring prostate play and anal penetration doesn't necessarily have the same breakthrough because they're not thinking in those terms yet. And some of them get to it later. Actually, one guy I met once told me that it was receiving penetration that completely changed his perspective on being the penetrator. But I just want to put it out there that, like, I would love for this to transform everybody's life, but I also want to be realistic about how people are in this world. But to come back to your other question, Alfina, about prostate play, it's really interesting. People use the same word to describe prostate pleasure and orgasms as folks with vulvas use to describe G-spot orgasms. So verse versus clitoral. So the language for clitoral and penis focused orgasms are usually described as being very focused, really being about the muscular contractions. There's almost for a lot of people, there's this feeling of like, you know, once I get off, I'm done. My body says that's enough. Not everybody, but a lot of folks. But when we're talking about prostate orgasms, similar to G-spot orgasms, I hear language like it's more expansive, it's more full-bodied, it's rolling waves of pleasure rather than a sharp peak and a drop. I'm capable of having multiple orgasms doing this. So it's hard to say, you know, whether folks with prostates are hearing the language folks use to describe their G-spot experiences and saying, oh, that's close enough, I'll use that, or are our experiences similar? I mean, that's that old question of, like, do we each see the color green the same way? But the fact that people describe it as expansive and full body, I think, really speaks to why this is something worth exploring. Yeah, there's a lot of pleasure potential there. And one last thing I want to say about this, when you learn to relax your pelvic floor, there's a distinct possibility that your lower back pain might lessen or even alleviate, because so many of us are just locked into our hips, especially men. And it causes real structural problems in the body. So learning to relax the pelvic floor can even, for some folks, even make chronic headaches lessen, because the pelvic jaw connection is very well documented for folks.
Epic. This is epic information. Perfect. Yeah, I'd love for you to elaborate a bit more on the other benefits that are possible from this, just health-wise, biologically, if things shift after a prostate orgasm, like any kind of bits to really like ground in. Like, yeah, we can talk all day like, oh, it's going to be the most pleasurable, expansive thing, but also like, I don't know, can it cure cancer? You know what I mean? Like, it's like what's possible to access this level of relief.
Well, it's hard to answer the question of like, what are the health benefits? Because it doesn't get a lot of research money. And it's also very difficult to isolate sexual behaviors because, you know, very few people only do one kind of sex act. So it's difficult to isolate. But what is believed, and there's some research behind this and then a lot of intuition from people who, like me, feel qualified to know about these things, but we may be wrong. So prostate massage can alleviate an enlarged prostate, which is different from prostate cancer. 50% of cisgender men will have an enlarged prostate by the time they're 50. By the time we're 80, that number climbs to 80%, so it's really easy to remember. And nobody knows exactly why it happens, but there seem to be a number of possible causes. But when the prostate expands, sometimes it also squeezes down onto the urethra, which is the tube that carries urine out of the bladder. So it can cause difficulty with peeing because you're basically squeezing the garden hose and, you know, less fluid is going to come out. Prostate massage can temporarily alleviate it, but you need to keep it up as a regular practice. In the same way that getting your shoulder massage might help with your neck pain, but until you figure out what the root cause is, you need to go back to your body worker. Another thing that prostate massage can do, though, is by helping you identify what prostate sensations feel like, it can make it easier for you to identify when you have a prostate infection. I got a bacterial prostate infection. They're less common on folks with penises because there's more tubing for the bacteria to have to travel up than there is on folks with vulvas. But it does happen. And I was able to go to my doctor and say, hey, I think I have a prostate infection because I feel this pressure right here and I know what that is. Men who don't have that experience, sometimes it takes them weeks or months to get an accurate diagnosis because they can't feel into it. They just feel like something feels wrong down there. And so it can really help with that. And knock on wood, but if prostate cancer does happen for somebody, if your partner is massaging your prostate with their fingertips, they will probably be able to feel like a bump or a hardness on the surface of the prostate, and they can tell you, hey, you should go to the doctor, because the prostate should feel, the surface should feel smooth like a ripe plum. So if there's any like nodules on it, that might be a sign of prostate cancer, and getting it checked out sooner is always better.
Sounds like breast massage.
It's
It's the same
exactly the
thing
same.
with breast cancer.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. And interestingly, both the prostate and breast tissue form during puberty under the influence of hormones, which is why our sexual organs, including the breasts, are particularly prone to health concerns like cancer, because those tissues are designed to respond to changing environmental cues in order to grow in the first place. But that also makes them, supposedly, from what I'm told, it makes them more prone to be influenced by other chemicals that we're exposed to, for example.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that they were that high. I mean, I feel that they're sensitive because they are sensitive. So it makes sense that as above, so below, like if they're externally sensitive, nipples, then they're also like internally sensitive, the tissue and what's the information that they're receiving.
Yeah, very much
Really
so.
fascinating. Wow. I oh, do you have a question, Alf?
Yeah, but you can finish what you're saying.
Oh, I was just, I mean, I love everything that you're sharing, and there's like so much compassion and just like just circling back to like the whole conversation and feeling, yeah, feeling really grateful that you're here with us today. I wanted to zoom in. If you wanted to piggyback on something else, Alf, you can take it away. But I wanted to zoom in actually, like if I'm a man and I've never like gone there before. Like, I just like, where is it? How do I access it? What does it feel like? How can I prepare myself for it? How can I like receive it? Like, what's that? If I'm gonna explore for the first time tonight, like, what does that look like? That was my
I love that question. I love that
Yeah.
question. I love that.
That was gonna be my question too, but even more broad, like, if I'm a man or if I'm a woman with a partner who is curious. Just from the like a complete newbie, or maybe only tried it once or twice, kind of like Heather was saying, how do you prepare? How do you warm up? How do you practice foreplay? Where do you find it? What do you touch? For how long? What does it feel like? What's the orgasm aftercare? Like, this is the whole process for dummies.
Frosted.
I love it. I love it. No, I got you covered. I got you covered. So the first thing I always tell everybody about exploring anal play is do not copy porn. Because two reasons. One, in porn movies, there's a lot that happens before the camera gets switched on. They've warmed up and they've applied lube. Porn is kind of like a cooking show where, the chef says, have half a cup of chopped onion, and there's just this bowl sitting on the counter that's perfect, and there's no bruises, and there's no onion skins on the counter, and the knife is cleaned and washed and put away. It's magical because it's TV. Porn sex is the same. That all of that stuff, the negotiation, the STI conversations, the talking about what they're gonna do, that all happens before they get on camera. So what that means is a lot of people try to copy something that is inherently not going to work well for them. Because there are people, the other thing about porn is that most people who make porn are very practiced at it. If you have anal sex 3 or 4 times a week, you can probably just go for it without warming up most of the time because your body is used to that. In the same way that if you go to the gym regularly, you can just jump in and start exercising without the same kind of warm-up as somebody who's new to the gym. So don't copy porn. The second thing I always tell folks is go slower than you think. Because the anus is exquisitely sensitive. It's actually very similar in terms of its nerve endings as the lips on your face. And I specify that because some of us have lips on other places. But if you think about how your lips could feel any little hangnails. Are there corners? Are there calluses? Your anus is going to feel those too. So file them down, or I just recommend put on a glove. Nitrile gloves are great. You can buy them at any drugstore. The ones I like are actually made for tattoo artists. The brand is Black Dragon. I don't get a commission from them, but I really like their products because they make them in black, which means they don't look quite as medical when you're getting sexy. Also, the pelvic floor is incredibly sensitive to our moods and emotions. When a dog or a cat is scared and it tucks its tail between its legs, people's bodies do the same thing. We just don't have tails. And I know there's butt plugs with tails attached to them, but that's not what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to get that out there before someone asks. But so if you have had a really stressful day, you know, your boss was yelling at you, you got stuck in traffic, you're nervous about anal play being uncomfortable, that will all tend to make your pelvic floor tighten up. And I don't know about you, but if somebody comes up to me and says, oh, hey, dude, chillax, it's all good, there's nothing to worry about, I get more stressed out because, like, don't fucking tell me what to do. Right? So rather than telling yourself to relax, and rather than your partner telling you to relax, what I want you to do is turn to your partner, if you're doing this with someone else, and say, hey, let's take 3 or 4 breaths together. And our nervous systems are going to start to sync up as we do that. And then here's the trick. It's funny because these days, a lot of people know this as a neuroscience self-regulation practice, but people have been doing this for meditation for centuries. You just extend the exhale with a slightly pursed open lip. So like you're blowing tiny bubbles through a soda straw, the smallest bubbles you can. And so it just looks like this. Let's do one more. Minimum of 3 breaths together. You could do this for 2 minutes. You could do this for 5 minutes. But what this does is calms the nervous system, which helps the pelvic floor relax, takes away the chance that being stressed out is going to make you a tight ass. And I use that term deliberately because people who are stressed out all the time are tight asses. People who stress us out are a pain in the ass or a pain in the neck because I'm clenching my teeth. Mm. These phrases actually have somatic roots to them. So long, slow breathing. I also recommend get really turned on first. You know, if you're new to anal play, regardless of your gender or anatomy, start with something you already know you like. Making out, massage, spanking, nipple play, blowjobs, erotic massage, whatever it is. Because I find when people are introducing a new sexual activity to their repertoire, the first time or two you try it, it might not work well. You're awkward, you don't know what you're doing, it's a new experience. If you start off with a familiar pleasure and make anal play a side dish, it'll start to teach your body to associate it with pleasure. And maybe you'll get to a point where you enjoy anal play all on its own, but you know what? If you do this for 40 years and you need a vibrator on your clit or you need to stroke your cock while your partner is pegging you, that still counts. Like, I want us to get away from this idea that the best anal orgasm is hands off, anal only, nobody touching, nothing else going on. To me, the best orgasm is the one that brings you the most pleasure in your body. Mm. So if for you that means nipple clamps and your partner spanking you while they're pegging you from behind, like, go for it. Don't feel bad about that. You know, it's all good. So that's all background stuff. Coming back to your question, Alfina, because you wanted the how do we do this? Start with...
We're going to take a quick pause from the show just because I'm so excited to tell you guys about one of the most transformative online tools that I've used that has really unlocked my pleasure journey to the next level. And that is the OMGS course. So until this last year, I actually struggled to orgasm on my own without the help of a toy. I felt dependent, I felt hopeless, and I honestly felt like there was something wrong with me. But within just 2 weeks of starting this course, I had my first orgasm from my own touch, and I was like, hallelujah, I'm not broken. And it's just opened up so much since then. I can honestly say it's just gotten better and better from there. So OMGS course is a fun, user-friendly course packed with all sorts of different videos and techniques and showcases a myriad of different women. And it will completely shift the way that you experience pleasure. So whether you're struggling with orgasms or maybe you just want to amplify your pleasure, both solo and with a partner, this course is truly a game changer. You can use the link in our show notes below to unlock your orgiastic potential and also to support the expansion of the cis society movement. Now back to your show.
External massage and start with lots of lube. The anus does not self-lubricate. There is some mucosal lining inside the body. It's kind of like the lining inside your nose. It's there to protect the tissues, but it's not enough to prevent damage from too much friction. If you think you have enough lube, add a little more and actually get a lubricant that's designed for anal play. Coconut oil soaks in way too fast. Mm-hmm. What I actually like is silicone lubricants because they never dry out. They don't get sticky. They're hypoallergenic. If you're prone to yeast infections, they're safe for that because they're bacteriostatic, which means literally bacteria cannot grow in them. So I'm a big fan of silicone. And if you really want to go for like the gold star, start off with coconut oil to like moisturize the tissues and then put the silicone on top, similar to how you might moisturize your lips before putting lipstick on, if you wear lipstick. So that's lube. You can use too much lube, but you have to work at it. Like I talked to a guy who squeezed like half a little small bottle, but half a bottle of lube up there because he was excited for his big date and he gave himself cramps. But you have to work at it to do that. So generally speaking, if you think you need a little more lube, add a little more. It'll be fun. Okay, so next piece, how to get inside. And here's what I don't want you to do. Just sticking it straight in. Again, that's what they do in porn. But here's a better way to do it, which is if here's somebody's anus. You can imagine them on their hands and knees because I think it's an easier position. But what I would do is stroke my finger down their butt crack, right over the opening, and as it passes over the opening, I put a tiny little bend into my fingertip. And so it's catching on that inner border of the external anal sphincter. There's two muscles that we have to work with here. They're about an inch and a quarter apart from each other. If you live in a sensible part of the world, 2.5 to 4 centimeters. So we have to get that far in just to get past the anus. So I'm going to catch that internal muscle here, and I'm going to press down to the floor. And then I'm going to keep my finger in the same orientation, but I'm going to push up towards the ceiling. It's a little micro movement. And then I'm going to slowly press down and slowly press up. And each time or two I go back and forth, I'm sliding in another millimeter. It's like if you're putting on a tight pair of jeans and you wiggle your hips back and forth to get them on. It's kind of the same thing. When you get up against that internal sphincter, it's still all closed. But this one is a pretty easy one to work with because now all you do is you take your fingertip and you do tiny little tickles like you were tickling somebody's nose. And if you do that for about 15 to 30 seconds, if this person's body is available to open up for you, it's just going to open up and your finger's going to slide right in. And it works that way because that internal muscle is controlled by the autonomic nervous system. It's not under our conscious control. The external muscle is the one you squeeze when, like, you have to go to the bathroom and you have to wait till you get to the, till you get home or you get to the store or whatever. But that internal muscle is controlled by reflex. So that's why I said if their body is available to open up, because if you've had a terrible day at work, your body might just say, no, it's not the night for it. I've been doing this for a long time. I still have days when my body says, no, it's been too stressful. You haven't gotten good sleep lately. It's just not going to happen. So that's how you get inside. As far as finding the prostate, it's a lot like the G-spot. You will probably need to get your finger all the way in. Even if you have small hands, you can still reach the prostate because if you push in, the pelvic floor will like tent up. It's not rigid, so you can push in a little further. And you curl your finger towards their belly button. And what you're looking for is a texture that feels like a ripe plum. The way that I often describe it is if you're on the prostate, it'll feel like the tip of your nose, like firm and squishy. And everybody does this when I ask. And then when you're not on the prostate, it'll feel like this over here.
Oh, wow.
What makes this a little tricky, though, and if the person receiving it says that it feels like they need to pee, then you're on the prostate, just back the pressure off about 25%. Again, like the G-spot. But here is one significant difference. Because prostates engorge and fill with fluid during arousal, they produce about half of the fluid in semen. That's their job. So they fill up like little water balloons. So for a lot of guys, especially men who are younger than, say, 35, you might not be able to find his prostate until he's super turned on and it's gotten really firm and engorged. Because as men get older, our prostates often just get bigger on their own, they can be easier to find. So if you're with a guy who's 25, you might need to give him a blowjob for 15, 20 minutes first before you do prostate play. If you're with a guy who's in his 50s, you have a pretty good chance of finding it without that level of warm-up necessarily. So, as far as prostate massage, you can kind of take any G-spot massage technique and apply it. So the come hither works great. This is the only time anyone says hither, is come hither. You can do like tapping, which is kind of like typing on a keyboard, tap, tap, tappity tap. You can do big circles over the whole surface area. You can do little circles on one spot and you can move around. One of my favorites is windshield wiper. That's a really fun one. Two fingers can also work for prostate. You can do like finger walking. So I'm walking my fingertips, which is different from come hither.
I like that. That's nice and rhythmic.
Yeah, it's a really nice rhythmic one.
Like your fingers are doing salsa, you know?
Yeah.
Moonwalk.
And with all of, oh, I like that. I'm going to call that the moonwalk now. Thank you for that. That's amazing. That's amazing. With all of these moves, you want to change up the tempo or the technique or the pressure every few minutes because the prostate kind of gets numbed out if you stick with the same sensation for too long. So just every now and then, just change it up. You don't need to remember 25 different moves. If you know three of them, and then you cycle through them with different pressure, different speed, you'll be fine. I like to have music that has a nice, solid tempo to it. I know for me, when I get turned on, I want to speed up. And I don't know why almost everybody does this, because when we're receiving, we don't want that. But when we're giving, it's like, oh, this is great. Let's go faster. So I like having music with a nice steady beat, because then if I start losing my rhythm with it, I can just listen to the beat and it'll get me back on track. That's a really good trick for spanking too, by the way. I'm not as rhythmic as I could be, or as I would like to be. You know, some people can do like come hither with one hand and circles with their other hand. I have to do up and down. I can do circles and circles, or linear and linear. So I say that because if your partner likes to stroke his, or if your partner likes his penis to be stroked with an up and down motion, but he likes his prostate done with a circle motion, and you can't handle doing both of those at the same time, like me, that's fine. Tell him to stroke his own cock. You know, that's great. That's great.
I have a question around this, like in the middle, because I know I'll forget if I don't ask it now. Yeah, I'm really talking about this prostate orgasms or prostate play for dummies. The play-by-play, it's so clear. I feel like we could turn it into a book.
I have.
Yeah, exactly, you did. Exactly. Go check out the book. Thank you for the reminder.
No, so yeah, what's the question?
That's so funny. Yeah. Is that, do you need penile or like lingam stimulation in order? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew, but I just wanted to speak it into the space.
Yeah. Thank you. A lot of people, especially when they're newer, do prefer to combine them in the same way that lots of folks with vulvas, when they first explore G-spot play, it might not get them to a peak experience without a vibrator on their clit at first. And for some people, that's always true. And for other people, their bodies just seem to be able to learn how to do it. And I don't know that there's any real wisdom around why that works better for some people than others. But, you know, it's all good, because it doesn't make you less of a prostate player if you need to stroke your penis at the same time.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm also curious if while you're touching their prostate, is it normal or common for men to get an erection?
Ooh, good question. Yes and no. So some people will be so turned on that they have a really like rock hard erection from this. And maybe it's the stimulation, maybe it's the fantasy, but for a lot of folks, because you're relaxing the pelvic floor in order to accommodate penetration, those muscles aren't basically valving off the blood vessels the way that they normally do. So it's not uncommon for somebody to be only partially erect or not erect at all while receiving anal penetration, or maybe they only get fully erect in that last couple of minutes before orgasm. It makes sense to me, you know, if you're relaxing the muscles, they're not going to be able to do that function as well. So something else that can happen with prostate massage is that during orgasm, well, actually, let me rephrase, during ejaculation, the prostate flutters. That fluttering sensation is the point of no return, or in sex therapy speak, they call it ejaculatory inevitability. Because it's a reflex at that point, it's just going to happen. So what happens is the prostate flexes and squeezes and releases its fluids into the urethra, that tube that carries it out of the body. That sets off the reflex in the pelvic floor to squeeze and contract and ejaculate. But because the penetration has caused the pelvic floor to relax, and maybe you're massaging the prostate and it's not exactly on the same rhythm that it's trying to squeeze on, some people report that they don't ejaculate as much volume, or they don't ejaculate as far, but then like the fluid will sort of leak out over the next few minutes because, you know, it's there in the tube. The pump just is not synced up quite the same. So what I'd like to say to folks is, like, if you are somebody who fetishizes having a lot of ejaculate, you know, you get off on having a big load, being on your hands and knees is a great way to do it, because then you get the gravity assist to get all of the fluid out in a way that doesn't work as well if you're on your back. So.
And this is really interesting. And so, I mean, I know this is different for every man, but is there like an approximate amount of time that the prostate needs to warm up until it reaches that fluttering point?
It really depends on what else you've got going on. In the same way that some people can orgasm very quickly from a blowjob and other people might not ever ejaculate from a blowjob, you know, and everything in between. But I will say that if you're doing massage with your fingers and you feel the prostate expand quite dramatically and then do that little fluttery motion, keep doing what you're doing, because if you stop, they call that a ruined orgasm. You know, it would be like somebody's going down on you and you're having a great time, and then right before you orgasm, they just stop and back off by 2 feet. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not as much fun. So if you feel that happen, just go with it, because there literally is no turning back at that point. Mm-hmm. Unless your goal is to ruin the orgasm, because some people do that as a kink thing.
I was just going to say, some people are into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll go for it.
Well, I just wanted to finish because it's like we're all the way through this process, but I feel like the juiciest part of all of it is like when you actually are orgasming, what does that feel like as a man? How does that feeling compare to, you know, another regular type of orgasm?
Yeah, the juiciest part, huh?
What does that part feel like?
So... Because it, you know, the way that people describe it really is full body. And I've talked to men who have said that, like, it felt like they could orgasm in these rolling waves, rather than there being like a sharp peak and drop. It's more like it crests and falls and crests and falls. And, you know, I've talked to men who have done this easily, especially if they're using a toy. Easily, like, you can do it for as long as your body can handle it. So for folks who practice multi-orgasmic practices like Mantak Chia's work or coming through Tantra or other related things, prostate play really gives you a lot of access for that. But even if that's not what you're aiming for, I've heard so many men say that, like, it just feels bigger. It feels bigger, it's more expansive, it lasts longer. What was that one guy? How did he say it? Somebody once said to me that it feels like it's the entire world is the orgasm.
Sounds like a flick.
Right? And because you can do it without ejaculating, if that's something that you practice and learn how to do, you can keep going, because it's the ejaculation cycle that frequently causes our bodies to say, all right, we're done, roll over and go to sleep. But if you have prostate orgasms without ejaculating, you can keep going and going and going for as long as your partner's hands can keep giving you the come hither motion.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you have that type of an ejaculation that it depletes you as much as when you have like a penis ejaculation? Ooh. Or do you feel like it's more renewing somehow or sustaining because of the way that
that's
you work?
That's a really, let me feel into that. Yeah. Well, if it's a non-ejaculatory prostate orgasm, for me, it's a little bit like potato chips. I just want another one and another one. And like, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time. I can keep going for as long as your hand can keep going. But, you know, I also am a long distance runner. I've got stamina. So, you know, I think that helps. It's part of why I go to the gym, is so that I can like have sex for longer before my body gets tired. It becomes more important when you hit 50, friends. So just pay attention to that. But also, I don't know how else to describe it except more expansive. It just feels bigger. Like, instead of being, like, penis orgasms can often feel like they're about this big, because they're all just right down here in the pelvis, and prostate orgasms can feel like they're the entire universe.
Wow.
Which is, again, very similar to how I hear G-spot orgasms described.
Yeah, my ex would just often say something similar, that it was just this, like, well, initially when he had one, he said it was the best orgasm that he ever had, and that it just was bigger, it was grander, it was vaster, it was encompassing. It's like, you know, they say, like, an orgasm is le petit mot, like the little death in French.
Yeah.
But this was like a grand death, you know? It was like, oh, really, like, meeting the creator and then coming back into the body again. So,
and it's hard to know how much of that is specific to prostate orgasm, nervous system stuff, and how much of that is because, I think, Elfina, you said this earlier on, stereotypically for men, sex is about doing. And we don't have a lot of space in there to lie back and receive. And I'm not even talking about penetrative receiving. A lot of men, you know, they will receive a blowjob, but it's always foreplay in service to intercourse, rather than I'm receiving this in and of itself. And I say that because I think some of what makes the orgasm so big is learning to relax, learning how to allow your body to go into that parasympathetic social engagement ventral vagal state while having the sympathetic arousal. Or, if I can put this in other terms, the relaxation is the container or the fire pit. The sympathetic is the excitement. That's the fire. The bigger your fire pit, the bigger the fire it can hold.
I love that analogy.
So that's why, I think that's part of why this helps, is because it just teaches you to make your fire pit bigger, because you're relaxing into it.
Invitation to make your fire pit bigger.
Yeah.
This has been such a beautiful conversation.
I love it.
It's just like, I feel like if you're a man or a woman who hasn't explored your butt, like, let this serve as an invitation, like a gentle invitation to take more ownership and bring in more curiosity with your body and love on it. Like, we are pro butt love on this show. And I really, like, really thank you for grounding in so many of these pieces, for your clarity, for, like, just the energy that you brought to the show. It's been such an honor to have you on. And before we wrap, I want to thank you a million times over, and B, want to pass over the mic to allow you an opportunity to share what you have going on, how people can work with you, like, what is alive in your world right now?
What is alive in my world right now? There's so much alive in my world right now. Well, so as a somatic sex educator, you know, I'm based out of Seattle, Washington, but I also do a lot of work over Zoom, because there is a lot of somatic work that does remarkably well over video. You know, I know my colleagues and I have been very pleasantly surprised at how much of our approach can translate like that. You know, I was worried when COVID lockdowns happened, but it works well. And so I work with folks of all genders, all sexual orientations, all relationship structures. But my goal is really to help figure out what's keeping you stuck so that you can get stuck and make sex easy again, or maybe easy for the first time in your life. And as part of that, I always offer a free 60-minute get acquainted call. So if you think you might be interested in working with me, I'm happy to extend that. And the reason why I do a longer discovery call than most other coaches is because the nature of what I do, and also being a man doing what I do, like, I really want to know that I'm the right fit for someone. So if you're not sure and I'm not the right fit, I will happily help you find one of my colleagues. And I can only do that when I really know what's going on for you. So please do not hesitate to get in touch. I love hearing from people, and not just about butt stuff and prostate stuff, but also that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really, you are a plethora of information mixed in with like a whole like divine cocktail of compassion. So beautiful. It's like the best way I can describe it. Like
Oh, I
so
love
much
that.
love paired with like this like a gorgeous amount of information. And I just love that you're this melting point that joined us this conversation.
I love it. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Well, and you know, because so much everything touches on our sex lives, you know, money and health and relationships and where we're living and our finances and our family, like, you know, I will just one last thing I want to leave for folks is as because anything in your life can impact your sexuality, find the support who can cover both of those pieces, right? If you're having grief in your life, find a sex coach who can talk about grief. Right, because that's real. And I think that it has a lot of potential to change the world when we can integrate sex into the rest of our lives.
Amen. Amen. Yeah, it's we're made through it. We come from it, and I believe it's a place for the largest amount of transformation on the planet, really, is to heal the pillar of our sexuality. So thank you for serving that to this planet. Thank you for bringing your energy today to the show. Charlie, you're the best. And if like, please go buy Charlie's book, The Ultimate Guide to Prostate Pleasure, Erotic Exploration for Men and Their Partners, and head over to makesexeasy.com to connect with Charlie or to work with him. And thank you for tuning in. We're so grateful that you join us, that you continue to join us. We would not be here without you. You are the best. We love you. And we will see you back here soon for another episode of Taboo Talks. Until then, au revoir.
Thank you for tuning into Taboo Talks, where some truths need to be spoken and some silences need to be broken. Each week, we come together with diverse minds to explore and integrate the dance between shadow and light. Join our community and stay connected to all of the exciting movements of our mission through our website at cissociety.world, where you can sign up for our email list. This is the best way to stay updated on new taboo topics, episodes of our podcast, and even find live events near you. On our website, you'll also find links to follow our podcast, Taboo Talks, on platforms like Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. For those who want to dive even deeper, you can join our private WhatsApp community to engage in meaningful discussions about taboo topics with members from all over the world. So don't miss a moment. Visit cissociety.world and share these conversations to support the expansion of our mission. Together, we can spark the change the world needs. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, and remember, the only thing taboo is not talking about it.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at Goop, and honestly, we just love them. They're not afraid to go there. Sensuality, sexuality, even the taboo. From luxurious pleasure tools to thought-provoking conversations, Goop invites us to explore our bodies with curiosity and reverence. And right now, they're offering the Sensual Self, which is a curated journey into pleasure, embodiment, and truth. Head over to goop.com/sensualself to dive right in. You deserve it.